Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with gut health and hormone dietitian Dasha Agolnik. Dasha and I speak about various gut health problems, probiotics and prebiotics, how to relieve constipation, and more. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find this helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now on to my conversation with Dasha. Dasha Agolnik, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my real pleasure, and I know you're going to add a lot of value to the listeners through everything gut health, functional medicine, etc. related. And I'm curious, what's the number one thing you are excited for our listeners to learn today?
To have actionable tools to start implementing to improve their health after listening to this right
Oh,
away.
I love it. I'm all about the practicality of things and actionable tools, so I'm very excited to get into this. But yeah, tell us how you got into functional medicine and to gut health in particular.
Yeah, I went to Tufts University to get my graduate degree in nutrition data science. So my background is very research heavy, very much Western medicine backed. And it wasn't until my and it wasn't under until I understood how the system really functioned that I got into functional medicine. And I really use that very lightly because I wouldn't necessarily say that I am a functional practitioner. I am in the middle. I'm going to tell you how it is. I'm going to tell you what your doctor is going to probably suggest, and I'm going to help you navigate. I like to say I'm more like a health liaison, navigating through what's evidence-based, what's not, how to utilize our Western medicine, and also how to utilize Eastern medicine. Because I'm not one who's going to be like, go do a colonic and go do all these things. Because look, it's not evidence-based. So I kind of like to say, hey, this is what I've seen in practice that works. This is what I typically see that works. It's a little bit more woo, but I promise you, like, I've seen great results from it versus, hey, go to the doctor for this. So I think what got me into it, long story short, is my own gut issues, my own gut struggles. And even 2, 3 weeks ago, I just got diagnosed with IBD, collagenous colitis. Being able to navigate that myself got me exactly what I needed the fastest way possible. Like, I'm blessed that it happened to me in that sense.
Well, I'm very curious about your journey in general in terms of your personal gut health. So you have just been diagnosed with IBG, did you say?
IBD, yep.
IBD,
So
yep.
when I was let's see, 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. And at the time, my doctor, he did blood work and he was like, oh, it's half positive, half negative. I was like, how does that work? But then he was like, I'll do an endoscopy. Oh, it's half positive, half negative. Let me do a colonoscopy. He kept doing these and I was like, this is so strange. But at the end, he did the colonoscopy and he was like, I think you are starting to have celiac disease and we caught it very early. And so I would recommend just doing gluten-free, dairy-free, seeing what if you have improvement and then reintroducing it and seeing if you respond in any way. And so I did that 3 months, gluten-free, dairy-free. I reintroduced dairy. It was not a trigger for me. I never reintroduced gluten because I was like, sir, if you're diagnosing me with gluten, like I would really probably suffer if I have it. And I accidentally ended up getting glutened from like my aunt or something, some cooking somewhere with like fish sauce, I think, which most people don't re realize has gluten in it. And I got glutened and I got so sick and I was like, that's it. I have celiac disease. It must be that. And now with this more recent diagnosis, navigating it, I'm almost wondering, like, did I actually have it back then? Because it might have been misdiagnosed or something along the lines. And, I've always really had this. It's really hard to tell with autoimmune conditions. Most females are more likely to have them. And then we're also more likely to have two. So once you have one, you're more likely to have two. And so I'm at like the highest risk. So I'm not surprised in that sense. But yeah, that was my recent journey.
Well, yeah, thank you for sharing that. And just for the listeners, I mean, many are probably familiar with some of these terms, but maybe you can specify exactly what's the difference with
Absolutely.
IBS, IBD, SIBO, even celiac, and so on.
Yeah, so IBD is going to be an inflammatory bowel disease. When you think about IBS, it's more irritable bowel syndrome. So it's what's called a non-differential diagnosis, which basically means that the doctors have ruled out every other possibility and they just don't know how to loop together your symptoms. And they say, you just have IBS. It's not anything serious, right? So unfortunately, most doctors start with that. They're like, it's, which is great too, right? Like, it's not cancer, it's not IBD, it's not these kinds of things. It's probably just IBS. Here, take Miralax. Unfortunately, my doctor started that with me 6 years ago, and I was like, I'm not getting better, sir. Like, I have debilitating pains. I remember I was driving home from school. There was like 2 hour rush hour traffic that I would have to sit through to get to school. And I had stabbing pains. It felt like someone had knives in my stomach in the middle of rush hour traffic. I was like, if I call 911 right now, they wouldn't even be able to get to me because I'm in like the middle of nowhere in the far left lane. And so I remember putting my feet up on the dashboard, putting my car in park and laying back while in the driver's seat, being like, I really hope this pain goes away soon because I don't know if I'll be able to make it home. And at that point, that's when I started being like, no. Doctors aren't going to be able to help me. I need to figure this out on my own.
Right. Okay. So we covered IBS and IBD in there. And so then SIBO and celiac, how would that classify as?
Yes. So celiac is an autoimmune condition in which your small intestines, so in your small intestine, there are things called villi, which are, you can kind of think of them as like fingerlings. And these fingerlings are what's important for the absorption of vitamins, minerals, foods into our bodies and systems. Now, when people with celiac disease consume gluten, the body actually, in these little villi, they start attacking themselves and they kill off. So the body is attacking its own villi. And so you lead to malabsorption, maldigestion, bloating, gas, because the body can't digest its food and absorb the minerals properly. So obviously, there is no cure, but if you avoid gluten, you are not predisposing your body to going into an immune flare-up. And then SIBO is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And so that is when you have an overgrowth of quote unquote bad to good gut bugs. So these bugs just can lead to a lot of bloating, constipation. It is not as serious as an autoimmune condition. It can be treated very easily, either over the counter or with antibiotics, or with an elemental diet. So there's a few different ways that you can treat that. But yeah, that's the other one. There's so
Awesome.
many more too. We could
Yeah,
dive into them, like
of course,
candida, parasites, like all these
right.
things. But
Yeah,
we'll start.
those are often the first few names that are kind of thrown around. So thank you so much for explaining that to us. And I guess one of the first questions I often get when people are experiencing bloating or just are curious about how can I improve my gut health is, should I do an elimination diet? If so, what kind of elimination? You just mentioned eliminating gluten and dairy for a while, but then you reintroduced it. So maybe you can explain or give the listeners some actionable tools also as to how they, if they should start an elimination diet, what kind and how to go about it.
You'll drive yourself crazy until you get to your root cause. So I will say, like, go through a proper understanding what's going on in your body and focus instead on optimizing digestion. So instead of feeling like you have to remove things, first try and understand, and even just food journal for a week, where are my flare-ups? At what points do they happen? What did I eat during that time? And then start working a little bit more backwards on optimizing it. So, does it happen every time I eat like watermelon and cherries and all these high FODMAP fruits? Or does it happen more so because I'm constipated or around my cycle or around these things? So the five things that I like, I think it's five questions that I like to ask clients is, how often does it occur? Is it painful? What's the frequency, right? So if it occurs once a day, that's great. It does it happen once a day, maybe every 3 months, or is it happening once a day, every day? You know, what, how often is that happening on top of within the day, how often it's happening? Painful, how often? Usually what this is signaling to us is if it's more so of just a normal bloat and gas, or is it distension? And like I mentioned earlier, more so like a whole body, like immune reaction, something's not digesting properly, which could signal, again, it's not going to be an autoimmune disease. It's going to most likely just be some sort of dysbiosis that's causing what's called intestinal permeability. Now, this happens for two main reasons, three main reasons. I would say alcohol can cause intestinal permeability. Alcohol, NSAIDs, dysbiosis, like I said, like an overgrowth of bad to good gut bacteria, and that can be either in the small intestine or the large intestine. And for some people, gluten. However, what I have found is that most people who are able to work with us and heal their gut lining are able to reintroduce gluten and dairy successfully and any of their food triggers successfully back into the diet. So the whole point is like understanding what exactly is going on in the gut, healing that lining, and then allowing the body to properly digest and absorb the food again in a healthy state.
Oh, so interesting. Okay, I think that's really actually encouraging for people to hear because I think often they believe, okay, I do an elimination diet to find out that there's going to be 10 foods I can't ever eat for the rest of my life or, you know, whatever else. So, no, it doesn't sound like that is the case for most of your clients.
Right. And this is also why food sensitivity tests are a scam, is because they're basically telling you the food that your body, like you're already eating. So, for example, if you do have that intestinal permeability, any food that you eat is going to pass through the gut lining and trigger an immune response in the system. I mean, that's just a normal response of the food that you're eating because you have that intestinal permeability. So, what those food tests are picking up is normal responses, unfortunately. So you don't need a food sensitivity test. And a lot of times you don't need, I would say about 85% of our patients don't need like a GI map, a stool test, or anything like that. But most people like to know it because it takes a very long time, even though the gut has the fastest regenerating cells of about 3 days. Every 3 days, your gut cells are regenerating. Even though it's so fast, I will say that most people see results around week like 9 to 12 if they go the natural route without testing. Some people see immediate results, but I see usually that's like the time period that it takes. But it's very hard to commit someone to be at week 8 or 9 and still believe that they will heal in a couple of weeks. But it does just take time to heal the tissue, the body, repopulate the gut, and all the things.
Okay, yeah, again, like I think that's a really helpful message for people to have. And I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, as to like understanding your own digestion and everything. And one thing you mentioned was cycle, how that can be related to your cycle. Maybe you can walk us through the female cycle and like what tends to be a common occurrence at certain phases.
So usually the female cycle, I mean, is a normal female cycle is usually around 28 days, and you'll ovulate around day 14 of the cycle, and everyone has a little bit different of a pattern, but you can easily track your temperature to find out when you're ovulating. You know, there's cycle apps around it. Now during this time, your progesterone is going to rise and fall, and estrogen is going to rise and fall. And with those fluctuations, a lot of times we see GI disturbances. Usually, what I see is constipation leading up to their period and their actual bleed. And so that's something that you just want to note for. Now, specifically in the literature, they haven't been able to specifically say, you know, map it out, but what I will say is if you don't necessarily look at the person's cycle and you look at overall generalizations of people who are more likely to be estrogen dominant, those people are more likely to also be constipated.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's helpful to know. And I would say that just from my own clientele and personally speaking, I observe the same thing that like the week leading up to my period, I'm usually a little bit have a slower gut motility, so to speak. But yeah, I guess on that specific point, because outside of cycle as well, many clients coming to us, and I could assume many of the people that come to you as well, do quote unquote complain of constipation or just not going to the bathroom regularly, or maybe having like very small pebbles, or going not actually having like a sufficient bowel emptying. What are your strategies to tackle that?
So our clients get a 5-page constipation protocol just because we all always have, like, there's going to be travel, there's going to be things. And, we kind of go through the basics with them. Our phase one is like, are you doing your basic needs? And this includes staying hydrated, having enough fiber, not having too much fiber, chewing your food properly, walking, like all of the basics that you would think that people are doing, but then you forget, you're like, oh, like I've been super inactive recently, kind of explains why I've been having trouble like going to the bathroom. Or they're like, oh, I forgot to drink my water. Or they're like, oh, I started this new fiber supplement and I didn't increase my water accordingly. Because remember, anytime you add fiber, you want to add water. So, things like that. And you're like, okay, well, this is the basics things. So after the basics phase, we have more so of the phase two of, food as medicine. Okay, can we add in 2 kiwis a day? That's been clinically shown to improve motility. Prune juice, have we done ginger? All of these things. And I will say ginger, it's not ginger tea. It's going to be a higher dose between 1 to 2 grams. So you want to make sure that you're getting the efficacious dose. So for example, if I were to have, I just told you to have 2 kiwis a day, right? For constipation. If you have 1 kiwi a day, that is not evidence-based to have results and improve motility. So, and just like if you were to say, like, ginger doesn't work for me, it's like, okay, well, are you having ginger tea or are you having it in a very high potent dose? In Thailand, when I went to Thailand, they actually sell ginger tea packets. And I saw it recently. Trader Joe's has them as well. And it's basically powdered ginger. So you could probably just buy McCormick. I recommend my clients buy it offline. And you just have a teaspoon or two in a drink with like some apple cider vinegar. And that's really, really great at stimulating those digestive juices and getting anti-inflammatory compounds in. I usually recommend like add a little cinnamon or stevia to help it go down. And if you think hard enough, it's almost like apple cider. But those are really great hacks to just kind of stimulate flow, bile flow, digestion. Other things you can do to help stimulate bile flow. Bile is essentially, I like to say it's like a wrecking ball. So if you ever have seen Miley Cyrus's wrecking ball video, there are three main components to digestion, and it's going to be bile, digestive enzymes, and then stomach acid. All three of these are necessary to have proper digestion. Bile is like the wrecking ball. Bile takes the fat globulins that you have, wrecks it into very small, small, small globulins that then the digestive enzymes and the lipase can go in and break down properly. So when you see and you think about your digestive processes, it's like, okay, it's not just stomach acid, it's not just enzymes, it's not just bile. It's like all three of these working properly to help aid in my digestion so that I'm actually breaking down the food and it's not just getting stuck there. So, anyways, phase two is a lot about those kinds of things. Like, what can we do food as medicine wise? Can we start the L massages, the ILU massages, if you've heard of those? Can we do more so like castor oil packs? Like, what is going to help stimulate the GI without supplements? So, phase three is more so what supplements can I be utilizing? And phase three is going to be, there's so many on the marketplace. There's going to be things like Trifla, MAGO7, Super Aloe, all the things, but magnesium citrate. Like there's so many out there. It's really finding about the one that fits best for you because a lot of those are then associated with bloat or something else. Like that's this one you use for high dose, this one you use for never, or so forth and so on and so forth. But that's where it's kind of more so. I don't want to give medical advice on this, but just, look into other supplemental options and seeing if that's the route. But I would never jump to supplements unless I've actually nailed the basics, gone through phase two, understood that. And there's a medium, right? There's sometimes you just have to jump into step three in order to get a quick win, but we have to be building phase one and two so that we can wean off of it and not be dependent on it.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really important for people to hear because we do sometimes want to just like, oh, just give me a quick fix. If you haven't been to the bathroom for like 2, 3 days, you're really uncomfortable and like, okay, let's take a higher dose of magnesium citrate or whatever just to get you feeling more comfortable again. But let's look at why that even happened. And oh, okay, you were traveling, you were sitting a lot, you didn't drink enough. Okay, let's make sure you're rehydrating and that you're actually keeping up with your fiber and all these other good things that you mentioned. One thing I do also often observe, or kind of like correlations, I would say that generally speaking, the people that tend to be more on the constipation side are more like the type A stressed out people. And I think even just addressing it from like a lifestyle perspective in the sense of, can we do more winding down practices? Can you actually eat more in a relaxed state as opposed to like on the go? Or if you're on the go, make sure it's more of a smoothie and it's going down more easily. You're taking a few deep breaths beforehand. Or if you are like actually constipated, taking a warm bath or going to the sauna so that those muscles also relax. I've found that that is sometimes quite helpful as well.
Yeah, bowel training is part of phase one. So bowel training is just, giving yourself the time and space to use the restroom and just getting the body like in a safe place where it's like, hey, we're training you right now. Just like you go to the gym to train the muscle, it's almost like, hey, this is when you're going to go to the bathroom. And the same thing you think about when you potty train a child, how do you get them to go, right? You give them an outlet and you give them specific time. Hey, this is exactly like 30 to 45 minutes after you eat. Like, let's just sit. Nothing has to come out. There's no pressure, but let's just give the body space and time. And you build that routine where you're eating at the same time, you're sitting on the bathroom at the same time. Like, your body will relearn how to go. And that is evidence-based.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love how you're just approaching it from an evidence-based place, but then at the same time making it practical. And speaking of supplements, one thing that obviously almost always comes up, I guess, when we talk about gut health and so on, is probiotics. And I'd love to have your take on that. Well, number one, probiotic foods. How beneficial are they really? And also, if so, in which quantities? And number two, obviously, probiotic supplements or also prebiotics, I guess, on that note.
Yeah, so we can go through prebiotics, postbiotics, symbiotics. There's so many we can definitely dive into. But let's start with the functional food side, which is going to be all of your fermented foods, your kombuchas, your sauerkrauts, your kimchi, your kefirs. All of these are fermented and they have bacteria in it. Make sure when you go to the grocery store that it actually does have it in it. I've seen so many people buy sauerkraut that has not been like cultured. It's not cultured sauerkraut. It's just it hasn't been. And so just make sure that if you are trying to use it for a health benefit, it has the health benefit associated compounds in it, which is the bacteria. Okay. So these types of foods, they help you more so with digestion than they do with changing your microbiome. So the benefit here is, again, if you're lacking those digestive juices, your body's struggling to digest the food, we're not absorbing the nutrients. So it doesn't matter how healthy foods you're eating, if you're not absorbing it, it doesn't really matter. It's kind of just sitting there feeding the bad gut bugs, etc. So by adding the probiotics, we're able to digest our food a little bit better because those bacteria that are in those foods can work on the foods that you've already consumed. Now, this is where it's like, if you drink kombucha, it's not really, you can argue that there's a health benefit if you're consuming it in the middle of the day without food, but the real power comes when they're together. The bacteria is with the food, and that's where like kimchi, kefir is going to be best. That's where I would recommend the functional food aspects of the probiotic foods. But when you are looking at supplementation, every single strain of bacteria has a specific outcome that has been studied. So I never recommend generic probiotics. They're a waste of money. You have to choose the specific strain towards the specific outcome that you're looking for. So yeah.
So for that, then we would obviously need gut health testing after all. Is that correct? To like find out, what bacteria you're quote unquote missing, because otherwise you would never know what to supplement for, or how do you go about that?
It's more so about the health. Like, I can probably tell you if you come to me what's probably going on and recommend a probiotic around it. For example, if you're more constipated, there is more constipation-based probiotics that I would use. If you have more diarrhea, there's more diarrhea-based probiotics that I would use. If you have immune issues, there's a specific probiotics that I would use for immune problems. It's never my first line because it's almost like, it's a tool, but it's not necessarily going to completely change you to use the probiotics. And I think one of the worst things is when people come to providers and they have this long list of like 20 supplements that they have to take. You feel like a
Gotcha.
drug addict afterwards. So
Yeah.
I really want to be strategic and specific when we do implement probiotics. But yes, you're right. I would probably wait until a GI map comes back or something like that. However, for a lot of people too, you can probably save them a GI map by just trying a supplement from the start.
Gotcha. Okay. And so then let's talk about prebiotics, postbiotics, and symbiotics. First of all, what's the differences between all of that? And then how do we incorporate those?
Awesome. So prebiotics is going to be things like fibers, right? It's the food for the probiotics. So prebiotics are foods for the probiotics. Then the postbiotics are going to be what the bacteria actually makes. So the short chain fatty acids, the butyrates, those are going to be your postbiotics. Those are the ones that have that medicinal effect. And then symbiotics are going to be, they sell certain probiotics that have the prebiotic in it already. So they term it a symbiotic because they're giving you both the food and the bacteria in one pill.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, that's quite practical. So I have a, I guess, even more applicable question for you, Dasha. And what I guess if that's something that's hard to answer, no worries. But let's just say if you were to put together an quote unquote ideal meal plan or meal day for yourself or for anybody who doesn't have any like acute issues, just wants to live a well-rounded life and nourish their gut. Like, could you give us an example for, let's say, a breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or maybe even some snacks in there, and what foods would be part of it? We don't need quantities, but just generally how you would compose those meals.
So when I was going through my own gut journey, that's exactly what I did. 'Cause I was like, I went deep onto the research. I was like, there's paleo, there's AIP, there's this elimination, there's that elimination. So I took all of the diets, histamine, candida, yeast, like you name it. I went through all of them. I went through the literature to understand who exactly is it for and what's the mechanism of action that certain populations see benefits from. And I was like, okay, well, if I were to create one diet that I could use on the majority of people, what would that look like? And that's what we proprietary created with Corpiform that we lead people through this 12-week process where it is an elimination, but we actually are fortifying your liver with as much nutrient-dense foods as possible during that time while eliminating any of those immune or GI disturbing fruits and vegetables that may be causing issues. You can still have rice, you can still have meats, you can still have all the things, but it's more so about the specific fruits and vegetables and fine-tuning which ones are going to be fortifying the liver. So the liver has three main phases: phase one, phase two, and phase three. Phase three is going to be more so like being able to get the stool out, getting the toxins out of the system. Phase one is going to be making them from fat soluble to water soluble. At that point, they become very, very unstable. And that's where we create like reactive oxygen species. And they're very, that's where, you want to get a lot of antioxidants for that reason to help support the liver during that time. And then phase two is going to be more so the conjugations that happen. So if you think about like estrogen, for example, needs to be conjugated in phase two in order for it to be properly excreted out of the system. If it's not conjugated, then it stays in the system and gets recirculated. Then you have this constipation, estrogen dominance cycle that keeps happening because the liver is not supported at that time. So, what we do and what I would recommend for anyone is to follow this protocol in order to help. You basically want to think of it as nourishing your body with as many nutrient-dense foods as possible. So without giving the specifics, I will say that, for breakfast, you might want something that's very easy to digest, things like cream of rice with eggs, maybe specific fruits that are beneficial for you. For lunch, you might want something like some bok choy, some carrots, some salmon. You can incorporate sauerkraut, but what I find is most people who are starting their gut health journey, they respond very poorly to probiotics in the food, whether that be from histamines or from, the dysbiosis that's going on. My first goal, like I said, in our kind of 12-week period is to remove as much stressors, really calm down the system, and then we can reintroduce to see what exactly is popping up and how we can fine-tune those symptoms. Lunch, dinner, very similar. You could do sweet, my favorite's Japanese sweet potatoes. You could do like a lean, extra lean ground beef with, or chicken or turkey, with other vegetables, cabbage or anything. The main thing here is you never want to have raw things and you want to have them as easy to digest as possible. Only because, again, one raw usually means that the vitamins and minerals have not been properly activated. We're able to absorb, for example, vitamin A when it's been heated, and it transposes a little bit of the molecule so that our body can absorb it better. And so the least healthy diet I can tell you is going to be raw vegan diet. The healthiest diet is just going to be very easy to digest, very soothing on the stomach, maybe warm, well cooked, tender. Those are going to be the easiest to digest foods, not like nuts, right? What if people tell me they're eating like nuts and seeds? I'm like, awesome, I love that, but let's make them ground up in some way.
I really want to highlight this point, Dasha, because I don't think enough people are aware of, I guess, how difficult it is or how much more work we're giving our digestive tract by consuming raw vegetables. So many people think, but I eat so healthy. I eat, a salad for lunch here
Salads
and
and
this
I
and
bloat
that.
up. It's like you're swallowing air, it's raw, it's rough on the GI.
Especially things like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, all these things raw, they might feel like they're filling. And yes, you have great, cruciferous vegetable benefits, so to speak. But yes, please do cook them or make them into a soup or anything like that, especially if you tend to be on the constipated side, especially if you've taken the hormonal birth control for a lot of time or you're not absorbing your micronutrients properly overall. I think that's a really, really important point to highlight. And just in general, maybe digging a little bit into that Ayurvedic look at things in the sense of, okay, in the morning when the gut is still kind of half asleep, let's make sure it's super easy to digest. And likewise in the evening, something a bit more soothing and so on. So I think those were some really helpful pointers. And I guess overall, you mentioned alcohol briefly, but just when it comes to other things like things that contain sugar, maybe chocolate here and there, or what's your take or how do you incorporate that with your clients over time so that it doesn't trigger another flare up once you've gone through all that hard work of like quote unquote cleaning up their gut.
Yeah, and I think that you can find sugar in natural states, and I have a huge sweet tooth, and I know that like giving up sugar is not realistic or necessary for majority of population. So I abide by like the 80-20, 90-10 rule depending on the person. Certain cases, I've had one patient who had psoriasis, and his He would fl we found out that he would flare from 1 gram of added sugar in his diet. And it was immediate, and we knew it was exactly sugar just because his hair would just, he was like, I cannot stop scratching my head immediately after I have this. And so we found that out. But again, majority of population thankfully does not have that issue. So I love to incorporate sugar in in natural amounts anytime. Added sugars is more so what we like to recommend. And what I say by we is just like what literature suggests is less than 10% of your total carbohydrate. So you want to just be more aware of, or I think it either carbohydrates or calories. I'm not 100% sure.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good guideline, and I love that you're differentiating here, like making sure people know if you're consuming fruit, sugar, and so on. That's totally fine. With our clients, most of the time we track our food in MyFitnessPal or other apps, and sometimes they then become aware. Like, I don't give a specific sugar goal unless it's necessary, but most of the sometimes people get a little bit inquisitive and they start playing around with the app, and they're like, oh, I saw that this and that day the app sent me like an alert. I went over my sugar target. Should I be worried about it? And then we're like looking through it, and it's like off from dairy or from because even there you've got the sugar from the lactose and you've got from fruit and so on. I'm like, you do not need to worry about that. The only added sugar source that you had was like two pieces of dark chocolate of 80%, or like there's hardly going to be any added sugar in there, so we're all good.
There's totally steps because I actually has a client recently like this, and I really am working on optimizing his insulin sensitivity a little bit more and his blood sugars a little bit more, specifically just because, he's gotten to a point now, he's like, Josh, I've never eaten so much food and seen such amazing results. Because prior, he just had that insulin resistance, and after working with me just for four weeks, I reset that, but I didn't have to. There's more specific strategies that I utilize. I teach other coaches how to do this too, and core coaches. But we started making these changes, and like a couple weeks ago, he messaged me and he was like, "This is exactly what I'm eating. Why am I starving on higher calories, even though this is the highest amount of calories?" And so there is a component to, even though it was like bananas or yogurt or things like that, you have to remember those are very quick to digest foods. So if you're someone who's struggling to stay full, like rice cakes and yogurt are burning. Like your body will burn through that very quickly versus a nice fatty piece of red steak. Like you're going to be full for quite a while for a majority of people. So it's about like fine-tuning a little bit deeper for sure around that too. So I don't know. I think added sugars, there's nothing really to worry about. You know your body best, and if you're constantly starving, just choose a more satiating option.
Yeah, very, very good point. I know you've given a lot of practical takeaways here already, whether that pertains to probiotics or how to get rid of constipation and so on. But to kind of round off the conversation, I guess I would love to know if there's anything else or just something that you'd love to give the listeners in the sense of what they can and what actions they can take to improve their gut health from here.
There's so many. I have them all. So I put together like a bundle of like all my resources, exactly what I would do, order these are the labs that I would order, these are like the protocols that I would do, dive deeper into our five speed pillars, which I didn't even have time to talk about or anything like that. If it's okay with you, I can share that text sequence with them.
Amazing.
It has like my breakfast recipe I've been eating for over 900 days. It has like I love it so much, and it's so good and filling. It has all of our 50 plus ways to optimize your gut and hormone health. It talks about the five speed pillars. There's a top 10 questions PDF of all the like, how do I get rid of my lower belly pouch? Like all these things around gut health and ketogenic diets for gut health and all the things. I cover it all. So I can share that with you guys if
Oh,
you're
thank you
interested.
so much. I'm sure the listeners will appreciate that. Obviously, I will link it in the show notes as well as all your personal information and where you teach. I think you also have a gut hormone webinar or something like that you mentioned.
Yeah, we have so many offerings. Like, if you want to learn and you want actionable tools, just reach out to me with specifically what's going on, and I will help you get the answers and clarity that you need.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Dasha. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Lisa.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dasha. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.